Thank you. So I'd first again like to thank USDA for organizing, presenting, and facilitating ASF Action Week. Iowa appreciates the opportunity to present today on some issues that are difficult but important to discuss. You know, one of the things in putting together a brief presentation and tying a lot of things together, it's not easy to do that. And a lot of these topics this week relate to other topics. I think Dr. Johnson did a great job yesterday presenting biosecurity, what it means and what we need to do, and how that involves. And when we talk about contact tracing here, so he helped to set the stage for what some of the things I'm going to talk today about. Modern agriculture saw some major changes that occurred in the 1980s. Those changes involved becoming very efficient and being able to provide an affordable and safe food supply system. One of the other things that happened at that time was agriculture became very linked, networked in many ways. So again, using the castle yesterday, picture a drawbridge on a castle going up and down many times during the day. And every time that drawbridge goes up and down, it's vulnerable to disease entry. So that helped very much set the stage. Maybe to also help tie things together and lay a little groundwork here, Iowa pig statistics. Everybody knows we have a lot of pig farms in Iowa. Iowa produces markets roughly every year 48 million hogs. At any one time, there's 24 million pigs raised in Iowa. And on average, our import numbers range from 29 to 33 million head per year. Some of the top states that import pigs into Iowa are Illinois, Missouri, Nebraska, Minnesota, and Oklahoma. We get a fair number of pigs also from Canada. And I'm stressing the importance here because those movements from other states, some of those movements originate from sow farms in other states. So these movements begin in other states, and it's an example of that networking. So the next thing I just want to briefly mention again, laying some more of the groundwork. You know, when a foreign animal disease happens, it becomes a regulatory disease. And certain things, Dr. Sifford did a great job laying the groundwork of the disease response and how it would go. The one thing I'll mention here is, you know, one of the things that we think about all the time during a foreign animal disease outbreak is we can't eliminate the industry while eliminating the disease. But we also can't let the disease eliminate the industry. And that interface is a fine line. And in fact, it can be very ugly at times. Some of our previous, you know, in 2015 during avian influenza, a couple of examples, you know, I set the stage there that how important industry is, what it means to Iowa, what the swine industry means to the United States. But there's people involved, there's people on farms. I can remember one of the very first farms that became infected in Iowa. It was a couple, they were contract growers, raised turkeys, and you know, it was very difficult for them when their flock became infected. You know, it was difficult to get people to come and help them. They felt like they were outcasts in the community. And in fact, you know, I met them at a fast food store in town because they needed a break to get off of the farm. The other thing that one of the vivid things that I will never forget from avian influenza was the time we were doing depopulation on a farm and the crew called from the farm and said, "What do we do with the daughter's chickens that are in her basement?" And we depopulated the whole site. So we take everything very seriously. Dr. Sifford mentioned regulatory authority and the 72-hour standstill. We're very supportive of that. She outlined the things that happen, how we draw the control area, what goes into that. So some of the things I want to talk about next are the quarantines, the contact tracing, and what goes into that. when we issue quarantines in Iowa, you know, we're going to issue a quarantine to all premises in the control area. We'll issue what we would call an affected quarantine, the infected premise, what triggers the control area. We'll also issue quarantines to all of the other premises in the control area. And, you know, we used to call those non-infected quarantines, but we're going to continue or start calling them not known to be infected quarantines. Because one of the things that we found and all of those contacts between premises, you know, we did have some of those non-infected premises that were in a control area become positive later on. One of the other things that we will do going forward is what's called network based controls, you know, and that's where we'll issue quarantines for premises that could be outside of the control area. And as was mentioned, when we're trying to find where disease is and where it's not, we have to be broad in where we go look for disease information to provide that the EPI, but we will issue quarantines for premises outside of the control area. And that was, you know, one of the things we should have known it going into 2015, but it was a lesson we learned there that all of these connections, there could be disease elsewhere. And when we talk about the control area, one of the other things that we like to say instead of the free area, the non-control area, because we know disease is going to show up elsewhere based on these connections. You know, and the network-based controls, looking at it addresses the movements between swine sites, and that movement, you know, relies in looking at all of that EPI work to figure out, is it swine movements? Is it people movements? But we have to look elsewhere for all of those other premises. We won't set up control areas around other sites that we quarantine that are outside the control area if they're just network-based control quarantines or contact premises. But if when we do find other infected premises, we will draw set up control areas around those. And so what becomes very difficult and is described, and even Dr. Johnson yesterday in talking about biosecurity and why it's so important, you know, those connections, even maintenance trucks, but you know, there are so many connections that go far out from infected premises. You know, we could talk about whether it's maintenance workers, whether it's load crews that load pigs in the middle of the night and travel several miles, 10 miles, 50 miles down the road to load pigs at another site. Whether it's, you know, pigs moving to a packing plant from a site that is not known to be infected yet, or could have been infected when they went and there's cross-contamination at a packing plant and that trucker takes it back to another site. And maybe that site still has other pigs in it and that site becomes infected before we know it, you know, and even theoretically that site, if it is receiving wean pigs from a sow farm and could track it back to a sow farm. But what I'm trying to point out is all of those connections and the work that we have to do with the contact tracing and trying to figure out where all of the other sites are. Dr. Sifford mentioned the 72-hour standstill, and our goal is to try and figure out what's going on, where disease is and where it's not in that 72 hours. But, you know, some work we've done in the past year and analyzing some records, we've been very fortunate. Some people have shared records, various stakeholders in the industry. And when you start breaking that down and some help that we've had working in EMERS and taking that information and showing where things overlap, we need everybody's help during that process. So some of the things that we'll do, you know, we're going to look at the infected premise and work outward from that infected premise. But what we need help from everybody, veterinarians working with their producers, is when we issue these network-based control quarantines, some of those outer premises that are, you could say, are maybe distantly related or distant, don't have direct contacts, we need help in and working through that. So we can sure start movements back up and within those quarantines and premises that are not directly associated, but we need to show some information of how they're not directly related to that infected premise directly. So we all have to work together, and that's where keeping those good records, being able to provide them, being able to help us work through them as regulatory officials is going to be very critical. And you can see here some of the examples, you know, the key ones we'll focus on is live animals, animal products, mortalities, and then some of those other connections. I mentioned in a prior discussion, swine record priorities of those records of any movements, having those for at least the last 30 days. We prioritized them. Some of the high priorities are those live animals, animal products, mortality. You know, one of those network connections that, you know, if a dead truck's going from site to site, I mentioned some of those other examples. And if you overlay some mortality pickups at a site and start overlaying the different networks. So hopefully everybody's kind of getting an understanding here that this is a hugely connected network, and we have to quickly work through a lot of those questions. So, you know, we understand that what that's all going to take, but it's going to be a Herculean task in that first 72 hours of what we need to do to get some of that information. So one of the things I want to end with is, you know, again, one of the key linchpins in all of this, well, premise ID, I can't forget to plug premise IDs and that critical piece of linchpin and connecting everything, but biosecurity is absolutely critical. Biosecurity is the protection from the unknowns. You can argue that it helps what to know and the knowns and setting up a biosecurity program, but biosecurity is the protection from the unknowns. And tying in with Dr. Johnson, if you think about this castle and the fortress around it, and if you think about being in those guard towers, and if you look out from those guard towers, what do you see on the outside? Are there arrows? Are there cannonballs? Is the enemy directly outside? Is ASF immediately directly outside your farm and waiting to get in? You know, if that's the case, just as Dr. Sifford mentioned, you need to be prepared ahead of time, because if that enemy is directly outside and you don't have that fortress solid, you're going to be at risk for getting disease. If you look out from that tower and you see the enemy coming over the hill, you know, is that disease entering the United States? Is it another state? I'd be thinking about, you know, is your biosecurity in place? Do you have time? You may or may not. If you look out over the horizon and see bright blue skies and nothing's coming at you, are we doing a good job of keeping a foreign animal disease in a foreign country? But in any case, biosecurity is key. Having those records available, having them quickly accessible, so if something changes, we can quickly work through where disease is and where it's not. So thank you. I hope that was kind of a brief snapshot into where we would be at in Iowa and what our approaches would be to a regulatory response involved with African swine fever.